Welcome to Guide to the Cosmos on webtalkradio.net with your host, Dr. Robert Piccioni, physicist, public speaker, and author of Everyone's Guide to Atoms, Einstein, and the Universe, and his new second book, Can Life Be Merely an Accident? With Robert as our guide to the cosmos, we will explore the frontiers of science and participate in the exciting discoveries of physics, astronomy, and cosmology. Now, providing public access to science, here's your host, Dr. Robert Piccioni.
Thank you for joining us and welcome back. Today we're going to meet one of the most famous 14-year-olds in the whole world, Caroline Moore, who is the youngest person ever to have discovered a supernova. Caroline, thank you for joining us and welcome to our show.
Thank you for having me.
And I heard you had a big storm back there.
So we have a lot of snow here.
You do?
Yes, we do. I think we have about a half a foot, a little over a half a foot, and they didn't close school, so.
So you're trudging through the snow to get to school?
Actually, for the first time ever, like, when I came out of school, there was just snow, like, on the ground, which was weird, because usually, if there's snow, that much snow that I have to go through, usually they close school, so.
Well, good luck. Try to enjoy the snow. So, Caroline, tell us a little bit about yourself to begin with. What grade are you in?
I'm in 10th grade, and I'm 15 years old. I discovered my supernova when I was 14 and a freshman in high school, so it was just a little bit over a year ago.
Well, that sounds great. So what do you like best about school?
I would have to say one of our science programs at school, we have a science research program, and I'm really big into extracurricular activities, so definitely that as well.
And how did you become so interested in astronomy?
Well, it's always been an interest of my dad's. He grew up in the city where you can't really see much of the sky.
You mean New York City?
Yes, New York
City. Yeah, we didn't mention this, but you're from Warwick, New York, which is, how far is that from New York City?
It's roughly about an hour and a half, 2 hours.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So not too much light pollution. We still get a bit of the light pollution, but just not enough.
Uh-huh.
So my dad grew up in the city where there's not, you know, too many stars. So when we moved up closer to the country, he was able to kind of get into astronomy and actually get to see something. And eventually the interest that he had became an interest of mine as well. And we were able to purchase a telescope and start kind of educating ourselves on astronomy and the stars.
Well, that sounds great. Now, you have a pretty substantial telescope for an amateur astronomer, don't you?
I have some nice equipment. My first telescope was a 10-inch Newtonian Dobsonian telescope, and that will forever be my favorite telescope.
Oh.
And
for sentimental reasons?
Images, so he has equipment of his own that he does with that.
Uh-huh. So tell us what a Newtonian Dobson telescope is.
Basically, there's two main big types of telescopes, which are the reflecting and the refracting. And the Newtonian is a reflecting telescope that uses just mostly mirrors instead of lenses, and there's a giant concave mirror on the bottom, and when the light enters the telescope, it bounces into that concave mirror and bounces back up to another, to a convex mirror that's on an angle, and it reflects it into the place where the eyepiece would be, which is what magnifies the light coming into the telescope.
Okay, great. So it's all done with mirrors.
Right, and refracting would be done with lenses.
Okay, super. So 10-inch is the size of the largest mirror, is that right?
Right, that's the primary mirror, the mirror at the bottom of the telescope.
But the whole assembly is much, much larger than just the 10 inches. I mean, when you say 10-inch telescope, some people might think they could hold it in their hand.
Oh, no, it's 10 inches in diameter, and that's just the mirror itself. Once you factor in the tube and, you know, whatever else, I'm sure it's maybe a couple inches bigger.
Mm-hmm. And how long is it?
Oh, you know, I couldn't tell you. I would say it would stand up to about my shoulder. So it's pretty tall. It's a pretty big thing. I'm sure you could fit a little kid inside of it if you really wanted to.
Okay. Well, we have some great images for people to watch while they're listening to the audio track today.
Okay.
So to check out the images, our listeners should go to my website, guidetothecosmos.com, click on the microphone icon, and bring up today's show, The World's Youngest Supernova Discoverer. And image number one on the website shows a picture of Carolyn with her observatory. So can you tell us a little bit about this?
Well, my observatory originally was my treehouse. And my dad decided to chop the roof off and stick some wheels under it and make it roll right off. So what used to be my fun treehouse is now my observatory, and I don't mind all that much, but...
You outgrew your old toys, and you made new toys out of them, huh?
Yes.
Great.
Absolutely.
How did you get involved in hunting for supernova?
Well, I volunteered at an astronomy show here on the East Coast called NEEF every year since I'm about 10 years old, mm-hmm. and I work with kids there. And a couple years ago, I actually got invited to join Tim Puckett's supernova search team when I was working at a conference that he was in. So I work at NEEF, which is a conference here on the East Coast, an astronomy show. And one year, while volunteering, I got asked by one of our vendors, Tim Puckett, to join his supernova search team. And this just opened up windows for me, just doors, opened up doors for me.
Opened up the heavens.
Oh, yeah. That's definitely metaphor right there. mm-hmm. It just opened up great experience for me, and I joined the search team in April of 2008, I believe it was, and it's just been great ever since.
So Caroline, tell us what this Tim Puckett search team is about, and how do you guys go about looking for supernova? I mean, they're pretty rare.
Well, basically, we're a group of amateur astronomers just trying to kind of make a difference in science and make some discoveries that, you know, are still out there to be made. Basically, what we do is we have several telescopes, large telescopes, and a portion of our search team works on imaging with those telescopes, and then they send me those pictures, which I then scan through for the supernovae.
Uh-huh.
So I get a new and an old picture, and I compare them to look for a change, which would be the bright explosion of a supernova.
I see. Okay, so we had Tim Puckett on our show a few weeks ago, and so what you're telling us is that there are these telescopes, very large telescopes by amateur standards, mm-hmm. that the team operates, and there's a group of people within the team that are responsible for actually taking the pictures, and then there's another group that analyzes the pictures. Is that fair? Okay, yeah. So let's say, and what they're doing, as Tim explained to us before, is they try to take as many pictures of galaxies as they can, as often as they can.
Right, exactly.
So he said they had a list of, I think it was 15,000 galaxies?
Yes, we image tons of galaxies. And it's generally the same galaxies night after night that they're re-imaging.
And the whole thing is to take so many pictures of a galaxy that you can observe when a supernova first occurs in that galaxy.
Right.
And exactly. A supernova is a brilliant explosion of a giant star, so when it does explode, it's very noticeable. So tell us about the images that you get.
In most cases, it's usually very noticeable, but in my case, unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on how you look at it, it was not very noticeable at all.
Uh-huh. Tell us more.
It was really buried inside the core of the galaxy.
Oh.
It just kind of blended in.
So galaxies are very concentrated at the center, and then they're sort of diffuse at the edge.
Right, exactly, yes.
So if a bright spot appears, it's easier to find it if it's on the outside. And you found this one on the inside, huh?
Yes, it was very close to the core, which, and at that point I was just new at searching, so I really didn't know all the techniques that I know now, where I could have just scaled back and, you know, done some different techniques to kind of help bring it out better.
So you get these images, Caroline, and you have an image of a galaxy let's say it's taken on Tuesday, and another image of the galaxy, perhaps taken on Friday. And what do you do with these images to find the change?
Well, what will happen in my software is it will blink the images back and forth, and I will compare them looking for the bright explosion of the supernova.
Blink, you mean it shows you one image and then it takes that off on the screen and shows you the other image?
Right. It will flash them at a rapid pace.
I see. And so you look for the change.
Right.
Okay. Which I guess is something that the human eye is pretty good at.
Yeah, exactly. And since the images are, you know, proportioned the same and they're the same size, it's easy to be able to see the supernova generally.
Okay, well, that's an important point then. The image has to be more or less the same contrast. It has to be the same size. It has to be the same orientation. I mean, you can't have the galaxy taken upside down in one view and right side up in the other view, or else everything would change when it blinks.
Right, and it wouldn't make for a very effective technique.
Right. Okay, so it blinks back and forth, and because the human eye really works by looking at change, this dot appears. And is every one of those dots a supernova?
No, and generally the ones that are supernovas are bright and look like a new star just appearing in the galaxy. Then there's other smaller ones that could be minor planets or, you know, a gamma ray hit or something like that. Often you do think, oh, that could be a supernova, and then you realize, oh, you know, it scales back differently or something like that.
Now, most people up to this point probably imagine that you're up at night at, you know, 3 o'clock in the morning, looking through the eyepiece of your telescope, checking out all these galaxies. Is that the way it really works?
Well, no. Fortunately for me, I get to sit on my computer and do this. The images are sent to me, and so I don't have to be out in the shivering cold imaging and, you know, observing.
So the modern astronomers, even amateur astronomers, are taking these images remotely.
Right, exactly. They could be sitting inside their house, you know, just pressing a button to make sure everything goes correctly.
And some telescope hundreds or even thousands of miles away is responding to the keystrokes that you're typing in and searching the universe.
Exactly, at their leisure, whenever, 4 o'clock in the morning, you know, on a work night.
How cool. And so you can do this in the daytime and tell the telescope what to do the next night or something like that.
Exactly, yep.
You are listening to Guide to the Cosmos on webtalkradio.net. I am your host, Robert Piccioni, and today we're talking with Caroline Moore, the youngest person ever to discover a supernova. We'll be right back after these messages.
Explore Dr. Piccioni's website, guidetothecosmos.com, and check out the spectacular discounts that are available to you, our radio audience. Robert's first book, Everyone's Guide to Atoms, Einstein, and the Universe, makes the exciting discoveries of modern physics, astronomy, and cosmology understandable for everyone. And it was just selected as the best science book of the year by National Best Books. As Robert says, you don't have to be a great musician to appreciate great music, and the same is true for science. If you can change money, you can understand Einstein. Robert's second book, Can Life Be Merely an Accident?, describes how precisely tuned the universe is to support life, and shows how amazingly improbable that is. Go to Robert's website and send us your questions, comments, and suggestions for future shows. That's guidetothecosmos.com.
We're back talking with Caroline Moore, the world's youngest person to ever discover a supernova. Okay, now, you said earlier that Tim Puckett was one of your suppliers. I guess what he supplied is this sort of magic thing that images digitally what's coming out of the telescope. It's like a camera, basically.
Right, yep. So Tim Puckett works for Apogee Instruments, and they manufacture astro imaging equipment. And so he was working at one of our conferences, and that's how I met him.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that he uses an Apogee camera to image our pictures.
I see. Yeah, I imagine so. So this is a digital camera designed for astrophotography.
Right, that's correct. Yep.
And so while you're controlling this telescope remotely, the image is captured by this digital camera system made by Apogee Instruments, and the image is then transmitted to your system. Now, is that over the internet or something?
Basically, it goes through a server, and I'm able to download the images off the server,
mm-hmm.
and then I can download them onto my computer, and then I can scan them once they go into the software.
Right, I see. Okay, great. So you were doing this process. For how long were you doing this blinking of various images before you found the first supernova?
Several months. I think around 8 months before I did.
So you have a great deal of tenacity. I mean, for 8 months you were looking for something and you didn't find it, and you didn't quit.
No, that's for sure. No.
I mean, in the age of instant gratification where, immediate gratification doesn't come soon enough, you're a person who, on the other hand, is willing to stick it out through thick and thin with no results for 8 months and not give up.
I you know, the end goal was such a wonderful prize that I would stop at nothing to achieve it.
Well, that's probably the most important element of success in almost any field, is that sort of tenacity. That's great. A lot of people don't have that, particularly young people who tend to be a little less patient than us old fogies. So tell us about this supernova that you found.
Well, it's an incredible discovery. It's the least luminous supernova ever. It, you know, like I said, was buried in the core. So really, it was just incredible that I found it, especially just starting off as an amateur supernova hunter.
Mm-hmm. It was relatively dim compared to other supernova, and it was in the core, and that
right.
The combination of being not so bright and being in a place where there's lots of other bright things really made the process very difficult, huh? But yet you were able to pull it out.
Correct, and the discovery image was what we like to call like a bit snowy. So it just looked kind of white and fuzzy, and it wasn't really that great of an image.
Mm. So on the website, we have image number 2, which shows a comparison before and after the supernova, and that we call the discovery image, which, as you say, is a little snowy.
Right.
And then we also have image number 3, which has been image processed to improve the contrast and the beauty, if you will, and that's of the same supernova. Now, it's very interesting that your supernova is less luminous than most. And in fact, that's really a new discovery for science, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And there's actually two main theories out there right now of what caused the supernova to be such an unluminous supernova.
Mm-hmm.
One is saying that it's somewhere in between a nova and a supernova,
mm-hmm.
where it's not nearly as luminous as a supernova, but a bit brighter than a nova.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one is linking it to gamma ray explosions and a black hole, actually. So.
Oh, how cool. Okay, so a nova is when a white dwarf accumulates a certain amount of extra hydrogen on its surface, and then if it gets a sufficient amount, that hydrogen can explode with the thermonuclear fusion. And that's a rather bright star, but much less bright than a supernova, which is
right.
when the star actually, if it's a white dwarf, completely disintegrates in a spectacular explosion that can be 100 billion times as bright as our sun. So your discovery is something in the middle that, as I understand it, no one had ever seen before. Is that right?
Yes. Well, now they're looking back at, you know, oddballs that they had seen in the past and wondering if, you know, there's any connection between my supernova and other supernovas that never really fit into any other class.
So maybe in the future we'll have novas, we'll have supernovas, and we'll have more novas.
Right. We'll have another totally Novus. Different class. Depending, you know, that's one of the ideas out there at this point.
Yeah, they should name it after you.
I wish.
That'd be great. So how could this be a black hole? Black holes are my favorite thing, so you've intrigued me here. How could this be a black hole?
You know, to be honest with you, the answer is really confusing, and I'm still trying to wrap my head around it, because I'm actually reading some of the papers, the peer papers for my science research class, and I'm still having some issues trying to understand that. So.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, the edge of science is fuzzy, even for scientists. I bet a lot of the people that are reading those papers are having the same problems you do.
And they're not in high school, that's for sure.
Yeah, right. Well, when you are discovering the unknown, you're dealing with things that no one understands.
Right.
And that is, in fact, the joy of science. If we knew everything, why would you bother staying up at night looking for supernova? Well, anyway, so you did this. You made this great scientific discovery. You stuck with it and obviously had a great talent for it to find this rather dim supernova in the midst of the very bright core. And the world has really come to praise you for all this, hasn't it?
Oh, yeah. It's just been amazing, the interest people have in this and, you know, the interest that people are gaining in this topic.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really incredible.
Mm-hmm. So you've won awards from astronomy societies, and you were even invited to the White House.
Yes, and I will tell you, it was the most incredible experience of my entire life. And, you know, I'm also a history buff, so being able to go to the White House was like a kid in the candy shop kind of thing for me.
Well, that's great. So we have image number 4 of Caroline shaking hands with the Obamas. President Barack and his lovely wife, Michelle, were in front of the White House. That's how many 14-year-olds get to go to the White House and meet the Obamas?
Well, not many, but there was one other kid there that night. He was the same age as me, and he discovered a very rare pulsar, so he made quite a contribution himself as well.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Right.
Can we give him a plug? What's his name?
His name is Lucas Bolliard, and he's from West Virginia. He did work with the Green Bank Observatory and, you know, poring over radio data. So his find was quite interesting as well.
Well, that's wonderful. It's really spectacular for people to understand that even a young kid who, you know, hasn't gone to 20 years of university and doesn't have a multi-million-dollar telescope can still make a contribution to astronomy and discover something new and wonderful.
And everyone can, really. I mean, my dad at the age of, well, we won't mention that, you know, is making contributions himself as well. He's got 2 supernovas for himself as well.
And, oh, he does, huh?
Yes, he joined the search team at the same time I did.
I bet they're not as good as yours, though.
What was that?
I bet they're not as good as yours.
Oh, no, not nearly as interesting.
Uh-huh. Now, listen, your dad can't be that old.
Well, I would say he's about 57.
Oh, ancient, ancient.
He's ancient. He's getting up there.
Yeah, I wish I was only 57. Okay, anyway, well, that's great. Okay, so, Carolyn, do you have anything that you could say to encourage young people who might be considering science and aren't really sure if this is the right thing for them?
Well, I would say don't just take what they teach you in school and, you know, close your textbook because you finished your homework. I would say if you have an interest in something, go out. We have so many vast tools now, the internet, books, library. We have unlimited resources now for learning. And I would just say go out, research something that you're interested in, and try to see, you know, what careers maybe are available in that field at some point. And, you know, don't let anyone discourage you, because whether you're a woman, whether you're a man, there's always an opportunity to learn more.
That sounds great. Now, you have a website that you could give us?
It is the Deer Pond Observatory website. I couldn't tell you offhand because my dad just changed the website, actually.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll have a link on my website by the time the show goes up. So it's the Deer Pond Observatory. And if anyone Googles Caroline Moore, you are number 1 on the list.
Yes, I am.
Yes. So if there's a movie star by that name, it's too bad, because now she's down at the bottom. I think the first 19 entries that Google found are all about you, Caroline.
That is a good accomplishment, I would have to say.
Yes, right. Okay, great. So, Caroline, I want to thank you very much for joining us today. This was really exciting to find out that young people can have so much enthusiasm, work so hard, and accomplish so much, and discover, really, a brand new thing in the history of astronomy. It's really remarkable. So your dad and mom should be very proud.
Yes, and they are. And they support me, definitely.
Okay, great. So we're going to hear from you again soon. I'm sure you're going to make a great contribution to whatever you set your heart on.
I definitely will. I'm going to keep plugging away at those supernovas, that's for sure.
Okay, great. Caroline, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Great. And thank all of you for tuning in. And remember, you are never too young or too old to wonder why.
Don't forget to explore Robert's website, guidetothecosmos.com, and check out the spectacular discounts on his books that are available to you, our radio audience. Send us your questions, comments, and suggestions for future show topics. That's guidetothecosmos.com. Goodbye.